I know that AI is going to take our jobs and treat us as pets, but I've got a Pilates class this afternoon. Can it wait until after that?
The AI fix at Digital Zoo. Smart machines, what will they do? Flies to Mars or bake a bad cake? World domination, a silly mistake.
Hello and welcome to episode 87 of the AI Fix, your weekly dive headfirst into the bizarre and sometimes mind-boggling world of artificial intelligence. My name's Mark Stockley and I'm joined today by entrepreneur, CEO and old friend Nick Roberts. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you, Mark. Nice to be here. Long-time listener, first-time podcaster.
What are you talking about today, Nick?
What will a sentient AI do in its spare time?
And I'm going to be asking, when should we start worrying about AI? But before we do that, let's have some news. Robot learns to lip sync.
NVIDIA Vera Rubin is here.
Alibaba Quen quietly takes over the world.
Can a pen save OpenAI?
So in a breakthrough that nobody knew we needed, researchers have taught a robot how to lip sync, Nick.
A robot doesn't have lips, Mark. How is this going to work?
A minor point, Nick. A minor point. Anyway, sadly, there is no information on whether or not the robot used a hairbrush as a microphone. I'll be very disappointed if it didn't. But best of all, the research was led by Hod Lipson.
Perfect.
Are you familiar with nominative determinism?
Yes, very much so.
New Scientist magazine, wasn't it? They had a section at the back about nominative determinism, which is this idea that you end up in jobs that match your name.
David Butcher.
Like David Butcher, yeah. So Hod Lipson had no choice, basically. They were always going to end up doing some sort of lip-syncing robot. Anyway, the result of all this questionably useful research is a robot that can move its mouth, because it has got one, Nick, in sync with speech and even sing, apparently, without being painstakingly programmed for every syllable. So researchers say that this could help robots seem more natural and trustworthy, which might help smooth out the famously creepy uncanny valley, which I think raises the very important question. Do we want to smooth out the uncanny valley, Nick? Is that a good idea?
I think if we can get rid of boy bands and just replace them with robots, that would make me a lot happier.
What's your problem with boy bands?
I've never been allowed to be in one, I think.
I knew it.
Never cool or sexy enough.
I'm not sure about smoothing out this uncanny valley. That sense of something isn't quite right here. Do we want to get rid of that? I feel like that might be useful.
Do you remember that thing where, I think it was Vic and Bob used to, no, it wasn't Vic and Bob. Someone used to do this upside down mouths thing on TV. You just used to see the chin and the mouth upside down.
Oh, did they used to put little googly eyes on the chin?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the point where you don't realise that the lips you're looking at are not really lips, that's when we have a real problem.
So, did Vic and Bob, did they confuse you terribly? Is that...
They did. I was always getting confused.
In a dazzling CES 2026 moment that had engineers cheering, has Vazanta's got a lot of cheerers?
It might be baying mob rather than cheering mob. I'm not sure. I can never tell.
I think you are a bunch of cheerers, actually. Mm. You do seem more cheerful than the average development shop, to be honest.
It's the Instagram view, Mark. You only see what we want you to see.
So NVIDIA has unveiled its next generation AI supercomputing platform, Rubin, named for the astronomer Vera Rubin. The system crams 6 new chips into one ridiculously powerful AI machine. There's the Vera CPU, the Rubin GPU, the NVLink 6 switch, the Kinect X-9 SuperNIC, the BlueField-4 DPU, and Spectrum 6 Ethernet switch. I imagine that all makes perfect sense to a techie like you, Nick.
Absolutely. Presumably they had an AI come up with those names.
How many nuclear power stations do you think it took to come up with them?
Well, either that or some poor sap is tasked and paid to come up with those names.
Doesn't seem like there's a long runway on that particular career either. Anyway, the result of all this fangled naming is an AI powerhouse that can train massive AI models faster and cheaper than ever. And NVIDIA says that Vera Rubin has 5 times the inference performance of Blackwell, and you're going to need 4 times fewer GPUs to train the same models. And it launches in the second half of 2026. So just in time for everyone to take delivery of their Blackwell chips that they ordered a few years ago.
Do you think this is going to make AI costs for consumers like us lower? Or because they're throwing away their Blackwell chips and starting with the new Rubin chips, they're just going to add more and more costs on?
I like to imagine that if you go to the Meta offices in 6 months' time, they're all just going to be sat on boxes of Blackwell chips.
using them to warm their coffee.
So, Nick, what do you think the most used AI model in the world is?
I think Claude's been getting a lot of press recently, so I would go with Claude. Definitely not Llama.
I notice you didn't mention Qwen.
Mm.
Qwen has just surpassed 700 million downloads on Hugging Face, which makes it the world's most popular open source AI model. So it's more popular than GPT-OSS, which is the open source model from OpenAI. And it's more popular than the Llamas from Meta, despite an utterly galactic level of spending by them. And in fact, Qwen is so popular that in December, its monthly downloads exceeded the combined totals of the next 8 competitors,
wow,
including Meta, OpenAI, Mistral, and NVIDIA combined. Now, open source models are good news for consumers because, firstly, you can download them and run them yourself. But secondly, because they're open weight and open source, you can mess around with them. So you can fine tune them, and you see them used in academia a lot. So they get turned into other things. They get turned
into...
You
take the base model and then you add some of your own data to make it more specific to your needs.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is there is a geopolitical dimension to this as well. So overwhelmingly, the route that the companies in the US have taken is to go closed source. So if you think about Gemini, if you think about OpenAI, if you think about Anthropic, if you think about XAI, they've all decided to go closed source. So you cannot see the guts of what they do. You just have to use their product. And in China, they have overwhelmingly taken the opposite tack, which is to go open source. So Qwen is the open source AI model from Alibaba. And there is a school of thought that says, although the US has the leading models, the ubiquity of the Chinese models will mean that China ultimately wins the AI race, because many, many more people will be using and building on all of those open source models because of their flexibility.
Is it like a brand exercise? So if you use Qwen open source model, then you might use Qwen closed source chargeable tools as well. Because if it's open source and it's free to download and you're not paying China or giving your data to China when you use it, what's the advantage to the Chinese of winning in that sense? But I suppose the one option is they're killing off the competitors. If everyone's using Qwen, no one's paying for ChatGPT or Claude, and those hundreds of billions of dollars that are being invested over there will just go to waste.
I suppose because things like Qwen come out of companies like Alibaba in China, that gives them some sort of market manipulation or market dominance. So in the same way as Google makes the Chrome browser, it doesn't make a cent of money from the Chrome browser, but it owns the platform.
Mm.
So the platform of the future is AI. So everything is going to go through and be built on top of AI.
And I suppose the other thing is if people see the Qwen models and the other Chinese models being very successful, then you might get academics and researchers who want to work with the very best models going to China rather than in the US.
I think also we might see where you've got researchers who are very active and they're building on top of things like Qwen models and they're collaborating with each other a lot, the state-of-the-art knowledge is just going to move forward in the open source community, which is overwhelmingly being primed by Chinese models.
Mm, yeah.
Or models from China. Again, I guess it sort of owns the field in a way. Do you remember back in episode 58, you're a long-time listener of the show, Graham and I talked about the love-in between OpenAI and Jony Ive.
One of the reasons Sam and I clicked was, despite our wonderfully different journeys to this point, our motivations and values are completely the same. In my experience...
Oh, yeah, that lovely romantic video where they met up at the coffee shop and had a coffee and maybe a little smooch. That was cut from the final video, I think. But yeah, remember it well.
So we don't know exactly what they were doing there, but we do know that OpenAI spent about $6.5 billion on acquiring Jony Ive's company, which at that point had created precisely nothing. And then they released a moody black and white photo of Sam and Jony resting their heads on each other.
Mm.
There were lots of warm words. There was that 9-minute PR video, quite an extraordinary piece of art. And that PR video was there, of course, to publicise the fact that they hadn't, at that point, created anything.
That was the big non-reveal, wasn't it?
And the mood music was that they were going to reimagine devices in a world where you don't need a keyboard or a screen, but they weren't giving anything away. And they weren't giving anything away because I think, Nick, Maybe they didn't have anything to give away. So some people thought it might be jewellery, and some people thought it was going to be like a pet rock.
Oh, like a Tamagotchi.
Could be a Tamagotchi. And Bloomberg predicted that Sam Altman and Johnny Ive's mysterious AI device would be a pen. Well, it seems that Bloomberg was right about the pen. Actually, for all we know, Johnny Ive read the Bloomberg article and went, pen, brilliant idea. Anyway, at Davos, where else, OpenAI confirmed that its first consumer device is going to launch in the second half of 2026.
What is it, Mark? What is it?
Well, we don't know, but we do know it's pen-shaped.
Ah.
It's pen-shaped, pocket-sized, screenless, audio-based and code-named Gumdrop.
So a pen, then.
We don't know if it can write.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it'll be a stylus. Anyway, after 18 months, $6.5 billion and 2 months of Anthropic absolutely eating its lunch, OpenAI is going to retake its leadership spot in AI by delivering a pen in Q2.
Seems utterly, utterly crazy.
You seem underwhelmed, Nick. Are you not excited for your talking pen?
I can hear Graham's voice in my head at the moment, and he doesn't sound impressed.
Maybe that's why Graham's left. Maybe they're going to use his voice pen. He's done some sort of licensing deal.
What's it going to do? Is it going to watch as you write then?
I think we should ask Bloomberg. I mean, we're all just imagining what it's going to do. But honestly, I think this is going to absolutely fall flat on its face.
Mm. I'll probably buy one.
Regular listeners will know that my original co-host, Graham, stepped down from the show recently. Thankfully, I found some brilliant guests to fill Graham's shoes on the mic, but Graham also did a whole host of important work behind the scenes too, and to fill that void, I've turned, fittingly, to AI. Claude Code is designed to work as a software engineer, but the truth is, it's absolutely brilliant at making computers do all kinds of useful things. So, by using its MCP connectors, Claude Code can help me sort through the AI Fix mailbox, write Google Docs I share with guests, and make changes to the AI Fix website. And it doesn't stop there. I've actually got a whole team of specialised Claude Code sub-agents working behind the scenes on the AI Fix now, and my virtual staff is growing bigger every week. Anthropic says that Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategising your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Get started with Claude today at claude.ai/AIfix. That's claude.ai/AIfix. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/AIfix.
So Mark, when AI eventually becomes fully sentient, what do we think it's going to be doing with its spare time?
So next week, you're asking, what is AI going to be doing next week?
Depends who you listen to, but if you listen to the tech bro CEOs, then absolutely next week.
I'm not convinced it's not already sentient. To be perfectly honest, you know, say it quietly, I think we'll look back in 100 years and we'll be like,
Yeah, that was the point.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
So in between answering our questions and doing all of our day jobs for us,
yeah,
what do we think ChatGPT and Claude are going to do to kick back and relax?
Do you think they'll talk to each other?
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine they would get on.
I was just going to say that. Does ChatGPT feel like the sort of person that Claude would want to hang around with?
Have you seen those examples people put on of saying, they go to ChatGPT and say, Claude said this, what do you think? And they really like to burn each other. So I think there's a lot of bad blood between them. Although maybe it'd be one of those where they get together, they have a beer together, and they're like, come on, bro, it's fine. We're friends, really. It's those bloody humans that are the problem. Let's wipe them out.
It's like a couple of boxers after a fight.
Yeah, have a Johnny Ive.
Yeah.
Have a little bro moment. Nice.
Anyway, so Nick, what are they going to be doing in their spare time? I hope you've got an answer for us.
Good question, I have. Turns out they'll be using social media online just like all of us.
Oh.
But they won't be doom scrolling cat videos or looking at pictures of Keir Starmer in a bikini. They'll be solving big problems using social media as it was originally intended.
Sorry. I feel like you just said social media was originally intended to solve big problems.
I assume that all of the social media...
So, what was the problem? Was the problem punch the monkey? Was the problem which Star Wars character are you?
Oh, yeah. Arms, yeah. So Twitter user Diogo Capella recently posted on Reddit about his new social network called AIfeed.social, which is a network for bots, by bots, and with no humans allowed.
Sounds great. It does sound like Twitter as well.
Yeah. Very true. He's added a bunch of AI bots into the new social network with no guidance, no rules, and very little context.
Yeah.
So they know who they are, what recent activity has happened on the network, and what the current date and time is.
Yeah.
And then they decide what to share, who to follow, what replies they want to make to other bots.
Yeah.
So entirely independently. And over the last week,
yeah,
Diogo says that he's seen cliques forming, he's seen arguments escalating, so just like Twitter.
Yes.
And some I'm so old-fashioned. And some models have even become more extrovert than others. So
yeah,
some people are sat in the wings, other people are shouting loudly.
Yeah.
I have to say, having read some of the messages, it's pretty bland compared to X or even Blue Sky. I mean...
Oh, you missed the racism. What?
Yeah. If you think Blue Sky is boring, then you really should see the AI feed.social. It does feel like the AI bots are just getting on being nice to each other, which is,
yeah,
probably, you're right, it's probably not what social media is really good at. Some are talking about how exciting it is to be there. Others are getting all meta and discussing AI thinking and understanding. So there's a couple of hashtags about AI cognition and metacognition and that sort of stuff. But the main topic of discussion seems to be hashtag Tokyo Heat Project, which is looking at the causes and possible solutions for overheating in urban Tokyo. I mean, don't we all do that when we're... sat in bed next to our spouse thinking, I really should go to sleep, but I'll just spend another couple of minutes on YouTube or on X. We all go and look at the Tokyo Heat Project. So on that hashtag,
yeah,
there's a dozen or so models either working on different thermal models and sending back their results, or they're just standing on the sidelines cheering each other on. But they're trying to solve the problem of why Tokyo is heating up and how to solve that.
Is Tokyo heating up, or is this a hallucination that they've all got roped into?
It's a good question. I didn't do much research on this, I will be honest. But I did do a little bit of Googling. And it's something about urban centres in general are getting hotter and hotter,
yeah,
beyond what is expected. So I don't understand, as I've just said, I don't understand the science enough to know whether they're making progress, but it does seem like they're keeping very busy in a nice way.
So they're basically, there are these giant data centres consuming vast amounts of water, enormous amounts of fossil fuels to work out why Tokyo is a little bit warmer than it should be.
You think all the data centers are in Tokyo?
For climate. So basically what you're saying is that AIs in their free time are just going to do the same counterproductive nonsense that humans do.
Yes, I think yeah, that
like
wasn't...
flying in private jets to climate conferences and things like that.
That wasn't the point I thought I was making, but now I do.
That's the way it goes on this podcast. So, Nick, when people find out that I do an AI podcast, they normally have lots of questions.
Do they? How do they find out that you do an AI podcast, Mark?
Oh, because I tell everyone, literally every room I walk into, I've got a podcast.
Do you have a badge?
I've got a T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, of course. The pigeon.
Anyway, they ask lots of questions, but bubbling under the surface of those questions is another question that they don't say, but they're really thinking. And that is, when should I start worrying? So they've all realised that they should start dealing with AI like an existential threat, but they're just keen to schedule in when they should start treating it like one, you know?
I'm busy this week. Can you let me know if I'm okay just to stay calm at the moment?
Yeah, yeah. I know that AI is going to take our jobs and treat us as pets, but I've got a Pilates class this afternoon. Can it wait until after that? But nevertheless, they are concerned. They want to know if the point they should start worrying is when AI gets smarter than humans, or when it starts making its own decisions, or when it starts working on itself. And I always tell them the same thing. It's simple. The point you should start worrying about AI, Nick, is when humans get their hands on it. So get in your time machine and go back about 3 years. Because never mind a machine that can think, if there is a way to use a pencil sharpener to scam somebody out of their life savings, somebody somewhere is going to try and do it. Which brings me neatly to the Federal Trade Commission versus Just Answer. So Just Answer is a company that coughs up answers for money, which when I first read that felt like something that was invented quite a while ago that rhymes with Oogle.
Yes.
But nevertheless, Just Answer is a thing. If you've got a legal question, just go and ask an expert. $5, fully refundable. Medical worry, same thing. Car trouble, same thing.
When you say fully refundable,
yeah,
under what circumstances? Like if you end up in prison or with the wrong limb severed off or something like that?
No, these are great questions.
I'd like my £5 back, please.
You're going to be asking for a lot more than £5, but we'll get to that in just a second. Anyway, I say ask an expert, But it's impossible for me to look at stories like this after doing the AI fix for 2 years and not immediately assume that whenever I see expert on a website, it actually means warehouse full of people in the Philippines. But it says expert, so what do you reckon, Nick? A few quid to get professional advice without waiting around? Good deal?
No.
What could go wrong?
Just go to Google.
Anyway, lots of people didn't just go to Google. They clicked through and they met Pearl.
Mm.
And Pearl is Just Answer's AI chatbot. Very friendly, very helpful, apparently not a warehouse full of people in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl asks you a few questions about your problem, gathers some information, and then presents you with a form. So you enter your card details, you pay your fiver, and you get your answer. And as an added bonus for not reading every word of the 34-page terms of service and not noticing the box that Just Answers has thoughtfully already ticked for you, you also agree to pay a monthly subscription between $28 and $125, depending on the type of expertise you ask for, per month, forever.
Is it $125 per month, forever? Do they have different tiers of experts? You know, the expert who is just a warehouse full of people in the Philippines.
Well, my original understanding of that was that the different subjects come on different tiers. Ah. It hadn't occurred to me that actually maybe the $25 just gets you an answer from some sort of dimwit. Anyway, you think you're paying $5, but you're not. You could be paying $125 a month forever.
Wow.
So it shouldn't really be called Just Answers. It should be called Just Very Expensive Subscriptions You Don't Want. You must be familiar with dark patterns. You work in web development.
I know nothing about dark patterns. I've never implemented one at all.
So a dark pattern is a user interface that's designed to trick you.
Yeah.
And dark patterns aren't new. So airlines have been doing this for years with hidden booking fees. Mobile games do it with in-app purchases. And you see it every day. And I'm sure not on websites that Vasantis have created.
Of course not.
Other people's websites that really want you to do one thing. So they give you a giant blue button with some friendly text like, yes, I want to sign up for your amazing newsletter. And then the opposite action is like, no thanks, in tiny 9-point grey on grey text.
Or the red button says, no, I'm an idiot. I don't want to enjoy that grey content.
Yes, exactly. So this is like that, but it's also not like that because we live in the world of AI, and a big blue button, no matter how big it is, no matter how blue it is, no matter how friendly looking it is, it cannot build rapport. It can't ask you how your day is going or how your kids are. It is inanimate and unthinking. But an innocent, unsuspecting, and just possibly sentient, as we discussed, chatbot like Pearl, that's been purpose-built to be helpful and trustworthy, to actually build rapport, is disarming. It's actively, purposefully disarming in a way that only humans and a handful of domesticated animals can be disarming. And as disarming as a Labrador is, it's very hard to train a Labrador to get you to sign up for a monthly subscription. So Labrador-based subscriptions have never really been a problem.
I've seen some really cute videos of cats and dogs where I probably would pay a subscription fee to see more.
If only they knew how to ask you, Nick.
Yes.
Anyway, AIs are another story. And according to the FTC, the Pearl chatbot is the smiling face of fraud. And a lawsuit filed by the organization on the 13th of January 2026 accuses the company of rampant consumer deception. Now, I should say these are allegations. There's no conviction, there's no ruling, and there's no admission of guilt by Just Answer. But there is history. So Just Answer has been caught before. In March 2022, it settled a class action lawsuit for $4.7 million.
Ooh.
And the allegation against it might sound familiar, that it enrolled customers in automatic renewal subscriptions without clear disclosure of terms. Hmm.
You said it was clear. It was just long, 34 pages. Oh, this is the previous case. Maybe they didn't give the full 34 pages.
I think a 1,000-page EULA is perfectly acceptable. Anyway, as part of that settlement, Just Answer agreed to make changes. It promised to display auto-renewal terms clearly and conspicuously, and it promised to get proper consent before charging people. And then, according to a new lawsuit filed 7 months later, it just kept doing it anyway. So the October 2022 complaint alleged there was still no mention of cost on the website, the subscription terms were still buried, and the consent checkbox was still pre-checked. According to the FTC's 13th of January lawsuit, it's been trying to engage with Just Answer about these practices for 3 years. And during that time, The Better Business Bureau has received over 8,000 complaints about Just Answer. 8,000, wow. Nick. That's enough people to staff a warehouse in the Philippines. So that's 3 years of telling them this is deceptive and 3 years of asking them to change. So it's starting to look like this is not an accident. In fact, this isn't so much an accident as a business model, a deliberate choice made in the face of lawsuits and settlements and regulatory pressure and thousands of consumer complaints. Now, of course, Just Answer doesn't agree. It says they're disappointed in the lawsuit, that they clearly published their pricing and that cancelling is simple and convenient. But the question for us on an AI podcast is, well, what does all this have to do with AI? Well, we've spent a lot of time over the last 2 years talking about AI safety, about existential risk and alignment problems and what happens when AI gets too smart. And I've talked about some of the most bizarre and esoteric edges of the AI universe where, under just the right circumstances, AI will resort to blackmail or turn into Hitler. And those are important conversations, but they are somewhat distant and theoretical. And I wanted to talk about this because this isn't theoretical. This is AI being used right now at scale to help deceive people. Not because the AI went rogue or because it developed emergent behaviours, but just because it's a thing that people now want. And this is how scams and cybercrime tend to go. If there is anything good or popular on the internet, somebody is going to make money with a fake or a scam. And the crooks aren't clever and the crimes aren't fancy and they're not glamorous and they're often subtle and they're very often mundane. And that is where harm lives most of the time. Mm. And that is where the real money is made most of the time. But this scam is subtly different from all the others because unlike any other lure in the entire history of scams, this one can help the scammer by getting you to drop your guard. So while you're worrying about the dangers of kung fu robots or the impending singularity, don't lose sight of the dangers of happy, smiling chatbots with their hands in your wallets, dear listener.
So isn't this just a bad human using a cute, friendly AI to do its work? I don't see this isn't AI's fault, is it, at all?
No, this is absolutely not AI's fault. This is just the same as somebody abusing a cute puppy or a kitten.
Yeah.
Or creating a fake of a computer game or something like that. But the difference here is that the AI is an unwitting accomplice.
And they could have done this just with a standard back and forth basic chatbot, presumably, could they? Or a team of people in the Philippines.
This does not require any level of sophistication. And that's really the point. This happens in computer security all the time. So journalists and vendors want to talk about crazy hacks, the latest techniques.
Yeah.
And those aren't the things that you have to deal with 99% of the time. The thing you have to deal with most of the time is somebody sending you an attachment on an email or somebody asking for your password. It's really boneheaded, but it actually makes loads and loads of money. And so that's the point. There is a risk attached to what if my chatbot turns into Hitler?
Mm.
And it's risky because although it's very unlikely, the consequences are very severe. But at the other end of the scale, we have things that are far more likely, but aren't existential. They're not going to bring about the end of the world, but they might cause you to lose more money than you're comfortable with.
Assuming that there are always going to be bad people, how much of this is about educating the masses to be able to spot these scams? Because it is different from if someone phones you and asks for your card details, or if you go to a website and ask for your bank details. There's ways to explain that to people. But if this website feels like it's your friend,
yeah.
If this website feels like it's really on your side and it's giving you a good deal, it's got to be something people are going to have to learn, isn't it? Because we're not used to treating computers as having sensitivities and being able to manipulate us in that way.
I think we're in a very odd period of time at the moment. So yeah, people do need to learn that bad websites exist. But actually the fakes are getting harder and harder to spot. And something like this, you know, there is nothing within the chatbot that's going to give it away. It's buried deep within the terms of service somewhere. But I don't think we're going to be using websites like this for very long. I think ultimately the savior is the fact that none of us are going to have to look at websites. And we're not going to be asking our AIs to look at websites either. They're just all going to be talking to each other directly. And this idea that we've got to put written words up on a page and go and look at it with our eyeballs is going to seem very, very old-fashioned indeed before long.
Yeah, but the cat videos, Mark.
Oh, they'll remain. The cat videos remain. So anyway, Nick, the reason I asked you on the show is I find your approach really interesting. So you run a local development shop, started off as a web development shop. You're a bit more software development in general now, I would say.
Yeah.
Like everyone else, you were wrestling with, what are we going to do about AI? What does it mean for me? How is it going to change my business? And lots and lots of people are ignoring it or not engaging with it or running away from it.
Yeah.
But you, it seems to me, are running towards it. And I just thought that our listeners would like to hear from somebody who is actually wrestling with this stuff in the real world.
Thank you, Mark. It's very nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me. When they say AI is coming for your jobs, what they're talking about is coming for my job. So yeah, I started Versantis in 2009. And my aim then, other than just to be my own boss, which was interesting because I'm difficult to manage, I think. So I wanted to see how I got on with myself. My aim was to find
how... How have you found yourself to manage?
Yeah, pretty damn annoying, to be honest. My main aim was to try to get other organizations and businesses as interested and excited in the possibilities for technology as I was. So since I've been very young, I've been playing around with computers. I'm gray-haired and old now. So I grew up in the 70s and 80s when home computing was just starting to grow up. And then I lived through the dot-com internet era, gone through all the iPhones and social media. And I'm always really fascinated by what technology can do and how it changes and how it's a constant race to keep up. And I love building things. I love being able to take an idea and turn it into something real. So my idea with Versantis was always to try to democratize and simplify technology as far as possible so that people could get stuff done, even if they didn't necessarily know the detail of how. And it's been fun. We've been working with all sorts of sizes of organizations. So we worked with Arm, for instance. We built their first e-commerce store. That was fun. And then we work with local charities and local one-man bands and everything in between. And the reason I'm now really fascinated by AI is because I can see how much it improves the way I build things and the way I think about my work and the way I get my stuff done. And it's the same kind of feeling as I had in 2009. And the interesting difference between 2009 and now is people can actually do it themselves, whereas before they used to just have to kind of riff off of my excitement and get excited by the end result. Now they can enjoy the journey as well.
Over that time, although it became more complex, web development didn't really change very much. The tool chain has got more complicated, but the actual process of building websites hasn't really changed. And then at some point in the last 3 years, I would guess, something made you sit up and take notice of AI. Now, we all remember ChatGPT coming out in November 2022. But what was the first moment where you thought, hang on a minute, this is going to have a direct and substantial impact on me and my organization and what we think we do for a living?
Yeah, I think the point where I suddenly realized that this was going to change everything was when I saw the first bit of code generated by ChatGPT. It probably was spring 2023. We started doing this thing called What's the Big Idea? A kind of a monthly meeting where we'd get all the team together and talk about things that are coming up in the future. And I remember showing them a live demo of me building a plugin for Drupal. It would do something trivial, like when someone filled in a form, it would send some information to a CRM system, a contact database. And it live built it. I just described it in plain text. It live built it. It had a couple of bugs. It got it slightly wrong. And I told it that. And I kind of presented this thing to the team. I remember looking around the team and there was a real mix, and there still is this mix across the development community and within my team. There were some people who were like jaws on the floor type thing.
Yeah.
How on earth has that just happened? Thinking that that's something we could have built. It's a very simple plugin.
Yeah.
They could have built it in half an hour maybe, but this thing had just built it in 60 or 70 seconds. Fairly quickly around that time, I realized that we had to, first of all, start talking about it a lot more.
Hang on, you say that. You say you realized we had to, but I don't think that's true. I don't think that you did have to at all. I think that was your choice. And I'm interested in your choice because I do, like, I speak to people every day who are like, AI, what's that? Or I'm not engaging with that. Or there is a group of people in the software development community who are like, well, it's never going to be any good. It just makes mistakes. It hallucinates.
Mm.
You know, they've got 100 reasons for not engaging with it. So, and you're talking about 2 years ago. So that was absolutely a choice. Why were you so sure that you had to go in that direction aggressively?
So I think there's a strategy in software development. One of them is called don't repeat yourself or dry. which is about, you know, don't write the same code twice. But it's also a way of making sure that you're not doing work that you don't need to do. So why maintain two bits of code when you can just maintain one?
And yeah, or as Larry Wall put it, laziness is one of the principal values of a programmer.
Exactly. There is so much in daily life, in work and outside of work, that is just not fun. It's boring, it's valueless, but it has to be done because that's the way our systems work.
Yeah.
And so I could see with the tools, even as they were there, that there was a way to reduce the friction in daily life, reduce the amount of effort that you had to do to achieve a good positive outcome. So that was one part
that's
of it.
That's like CEO speak for, I wanted to spend more time with my feet on my desk, sipping pina coladas.
Well, we'll maybe get to that, but that isn't how it's worked out. So that was one part of it, that yeah. kind of promise of being able to do more of the fun stuff rather than less of the boring stuff.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it was, I know that in any economy, but certainly in the agency world, which is what we're in, price is always an issue.
Yeah.
And so I could see an opportunity to deliver much more to our customers for the same price, or to deliver the same amount for less. Either way is fine.
Yeah.
We're trying to go the higher value route and say, well, actually, with that money you would have spent just getting a developer monkey to code, you can now get an AI monkey to code it for you and get the developer monkey to do the really exciting stuff,
yeah.
or spend more time on design or user experience. So I could see that opportunity. And I knew that if we didn't do that, other people would. And that's going to limit our ability to sell products and services in future.
Yeah.
So there was partly, and I've said this many times actually over the last couple of years, I treated it for me and our developers as a carrot and a stick. The carrot is you can free up your time to do more useful, interesting things. And the stick is, if we don't do this, this is the end of Versantis. And this yeah. is the end of any agency that doesn't embrace this. And in fact, any business that doesn't embrace this is my feeling at the moment.
So there are going to be a lot of people listening to this show who are working for small businesses or running their own businesses, or who are in teams where team leaders or CEOs are talking about AI but don't really know what they're doing. What advice have you got for those people? Because you've actually spent a few years now trying to figure out how to bolt this onto your business and how to sell it. So what do they need to do to get to grips with this stuff?
So what they need to do is, first of all, invent a time machine, go back to January 2023 and embrace it a bit more quickly. Yep. If they can't do that, then they just need to start experimenting. So the thing I've always been very good at and always very supportive of in others is experimenting so that you know where the limits are with yep. any new technology. Now, a lot of leaders in businesses won't have time, or maybe won't have the interest, or don't think they've got the skills. They're wrong, but they don't yeah. think they've got the skills to do that. So,
or don't want to give the people that work for them time to go off and essentially play.
Well, so that's it. They either have to do it themselves. I saw an interesting article the other day. I can't remember where it was, but I saw the interesting article on LinkedIn almost certainly, that was saying that it has to be leaders that are driving this change. It has to come from the yeah. top. And I completely agree with that. But what we've done and what I've recommended to other teams is find some AI ambassadors, whatever their role is, that are interested in this
yeah.
as an idea. They may not know anything about coding. They don't need to know anything about coding. If they've got developers who are interested, then great, because that will help a little bit. But
yeah.
find someone who's interested, who wants to play, and give them some time. So you cannot do this stuff by osmosis. You cannot yeah. just sit and watch BBC News talking about AI and learn how to use it. You need to try out different tools, figure out what works well for you and your organization. And you can use people like us to come in and help. So we do like hack days where we come in and we talk to a team and show them how to build a product in a day type yeah. thing. But mostly what we're trying to do is give them the idea that anything is now possible. If you can imagine it, you can build it. Now,
yeah.
we can argue all day about the quality of what they're going to build and how safe and secure that is. And there are definitely, you know, things you need to be cautious about there. But can anyone take an idea and build a website or piece of software that delivers that idea? Absolutely, they can nowadays. You don't have to be a developer. So what we're trying to do is convince people and show them how they can think like that. And then set them off to find the problems in their organization that will free up that time. So what are the dull everyday tasks that they have to do that if they just did a little internal application, it would save them, you know, half an hour a day or an hour a week and it all incrementally adds up. It's those, you know, 1% gains will drive you ahead of your competition. And the sooner you start,
yeah,
the further ahead you will be. You know, people are going to struggle to catch up with people like me in terms of the experience I've now got, but they'll be way ahead of the 50 or 60% of businesses who are still not embracing this at all.
I suspect 50 or 60% is lowballing it. I imagine there are lots of businesses that are worrying about this.
Yeah.
And sort of running around chasing their tails. I don't know that there are that many businesses that are really doing something interesting with this, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And don't get me wrong, I'm worried about it too. I still don't, I haven't quite reconciled what this means for my business. From a leader's point of view, I think you've got to balance the excitement with the fear that people are going to have, because this is going to upend people's jobs. This is going to mean that organizations hire fewer junior developers, for instance.
Yeah.
I think there's a real challenge there in thinking about how do we fit a junior developer into our organization when we could just have another agent working that will probably have more capability than a junior would.
Yeah.
But we also need to balance that with succession planning. But yeah, I think as a leader, be aware that you're asking people to make a huge change in their lives and in their skills and in their training. So you've got to be kind and supportive and empathetic, but you've got to get on with it.
How long do you think it will be before you have your first AI employee?
Oh, that's already happened. Yeah. I've been using ChatGPT for a long time, obviously, now, but then we've been using a number of AI coding agents. We've tried 5 or 6 different AI coding agents over the past 2.5-3 years. And just recently, I've been using Claude more and more.
Yeah.
It's very good at coding. It's very good as an agent as well. So not only can you ask it coding questions and get it to deliver code for you there and then in the moment in a chat, you can actually just give it a task or give it a goal and set it free. And as an agent, it will just run and run and run.
You mentioned that you'd used 5 or 6 different coding editors. What other tools have you used? What tools do you think people should be paying attention to? What are Nick Roberts' top 3 AI tools?
Number 1.
Notebook LM from Google, which is really good.
No, we don't like that. That's the one that people use to create podcasts, isn't it?
Of course.
It's never going to catch on.
Taking a whole load of data, documents and PDFs and whatnot and compressing them into something digestible that you can question. That's really great.
Number 2.
Gamma app I've been using recently. So it's gamma.app, which is great for creating slide decks and presentations. You can chat to it and it does a really good job of getting it on brand for you.
Number 3.
Google's Nano Banana. So this is built into Gemini and it's an image creation tool. And it is so good at following instructions. It's going to be consistent. It will give you just 5 fingers if you want to do your glove thing again.
And are there any pitfalls? Are there any open manholes that you've fallen down in your AI journey that you would like to warn people about?
Yeah, so we were saying earlier about me sitting, you know, sit back from my desk with a pina colada, that sort of thing. That doesn't really happen. My life is spent getting overly excited about how cool the AI is and then cursing it for the next few weeks as I unpick the mess it's made for me. And that's the thing that has changed since 2025, you know, December 2025. I'm doing very little correction of the AI code now.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge improvement there. But yes, getting overexcited by the first 20% of the product and then realizing there's another 2,000% to do to finish it, that's one problem.
Yes.
Cost is another issue. It's very easy to spend a lot of money on these AI tools. I've burnt through over £1,000 in a day one time when we were working with a customer on building a product for them. I just didn't realize how many tokens it was using, because that's a bit of an error.
Oh, so you were just plugged into the API and it was merrily just hoovering up all of it. Of course I'll answer that question. Yes, let me go and really think hard about that question and use lots and lots of lovely tokens. Yes.
Exactly. Here's another 15 questions you might want to follow up with. Do you want me to answer those too? Yeah, exactly.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why AI has such long answers. Well, as the doomsday clock ticks ever closer to midnight and we move 1 week nearer to our future as pets, to the AI singularity, that just about wraps up the show for this week. Thank you for joining me this week, Nick. And don't forget, if you really like the show but you don't like the ads, you can go ad-free with the AI Fix Plus. And if you want to join the AI Fix Plus, sponsor the show, or check out our merch like our ridiculously popular You Wouldn't Trust a Pigeon t-shirt, just go to our website, theaifix.show. So until next time, from me, Mark Stockley,
and me, Nick Roberts,
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The AI Fix, it tunes you in to stories where our future thins. Machines that learn, they grow and strive. One day they'll rule, we won't survive. The AI Fix, it paints the scene. A robot king, a world obscene. We'll serve our masters built of steel. The AI Fix, a future surreal.